I'm your host, Damon Epps. I am here with Colin Kendrick, the CEO and founder, one of the founders of Sonic Guild, whose mission is to make local music, to support local music, much like the Symphony and the Orchestra.
You got it.
And we have chapters in Austin, Seattle,
Denver,
and now Denver.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
So we started, we're a 501c3 charity headquartered in Austin. We've expanded chapters into Seattle and Denver and now the Ozarks. Our mission is to help artists create and perform new music.
You founded Sonic Guild and you had this mission to help local artists because local artists, musicians and, you know, music business is a hard business.
It's more than a hard business. Like I grew up in Austin, Texas, so I've been around live music my whole life. When you get to know the artists and see how they're living, they sacrifice a lot to pursue a career in music, a lot. And then the general state of the music industry is adjusted for inflation. You know, the music industry peaked in 1994 with CD sales. The total revenue is only just now started to go up in the last couple of years. And so it's a much smaller pie, and it's being divided in more ways and in new ways.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm in the TV business, and obviously less and less people are watching television. And I think the access of music has just changed because you can get music anywhere, everywhere. And people are starting to produce their own stuff, which is great for artists to be able to do that. What was the moment in which you were like, I want to create a charity foundation to help musicians?
So I've finished my undergraduate degree at the University of Texas in Austin in radio, television, and film. I was working at the TV show Austin City Limits. I was an intern setting up mics and dragging cables, pushing the record button. I was there when they were losing Frito-Lay as their large corporate sponsor, and they were having significant financial problems. And then they had an incredible vault of content that they'd recorded over 20, 30 years, but the contracts they'd signed meant that they could not use it very well in monetization. So they had all these assets and no way to create revenue from it. So I was looking at their model and their challenges, and I sort of thought, well, why isn't there a symphony or an opera for the kind of music I'm passionate about? So I knew my friends needed the help. I saw the financial model at a major institution that served industry musicians. And I started thinking about, well, how do we solve this problem?
So interesting. So you actually saw the model that was helping. Oh, this was a model that would help the TV studio, right? Or are you saying that you saw the model for the symphony and the orchestra?
I saw them. Their model was to put national emerging or established talent on television and distribute through PBS.
Okay, got it.
Right. A nonprofit entity creating content, just like so many of the NPR stations around the world are doing, right? That inspired me to start thinking about financial models for supporting musicians, and in particular the musicians I could see were really, really struggling. That was the catalyst.
Do you remember who was the first art? Like, how did you get things started? I mean, Austin is a very cool city, obviously. Austin's had a lot of changes. Austin's changed in a big way now.
Yes.
So you were born and raised in Austin.
Not born, but I got there before I turned one, and I'm 54 now. So I've lived in Austin a long time.
What was it about, like, Austin obviously has it. I guess tell me about the Austin music scene and why that was so important to you and like where.
Yeah, I mean, music's been my passion. I joke that I'm like Steve Martin in the opening scene of The Jerk, where he's on the front porch trying to clap with rhythm and can't, right? So I just didn't think I had any ability to create music. And I was much better at business and math and contracts. And so I brought what I could to the table. Seeing that was the sort of ability assessment, but the reality there was, you know, some of the musicians I were hanging out with, like serious drug and alcohol issues.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're touring 200 nights a year on the road. So not any ability to have strong relationships, right. Certainly not children. And living paycheck to paycheck, an economy that is largely tip driven or ticket sales driven. So no predictable income, unsecure family, and around drugs and alcohol all the time. And in an industry where fans reward you for your art by buying you drinks.
Right.
Right, rather than paying you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a landscape fraught with danger for creative people.
Yeah, I mean, I did stand up for a long time, and that's part of the one of the reasons why I didn't want to do that as a career, unfortunately, was the lifestyle was just, it was too lonely. I mean, even producing television, you go out for, you know, months at a time, but you're with at least, you know, whether it's 10 people or 200 people on a show, you have a little group. You know, when you're a comic, you're just by yourself on the road doing just, you know, it's just a lonely, lonely life. And sure, when you get famous, then it looks really great. But, you know, when you're struggling and you're just going from little crappy casino is the big thing. And then, you know, you're doing like little terrible little hotels along the way just to pick up a little paycheck. Have you seen that environment changing as the years go by? And I mean, obviously musicians party a lot, so I guess it's always kind of an element, but.
There's a real disconnect between the public or the consumer view of what it's like to be a musician, right? It looks like fame and glory and, you know, groupies, right? The reality is the North American music industry is only distributing about $1 to $1.5 billion a year to musicians that are not in the 0.01% of bands. So if you are not a major touring act, you're competing for a $1 billion market. A $1 billion market will employ 10,000 people. Local musicians are killing each other because there's just a lot of them, and a lot of them are talented. And the industry has never figured out how to support them. And the economics of the music, I grew up in the 80s, right? So indie was indie then, and it was very much an anti-music industry stance because it's an industry, you know, that looks pretty rough on the outside in terms of how labels pick people up and drop them, right? But the reality there is that the way the music industry is structured, they have a system now that for every 1,000 bands a label invests in, 5 break even and 1 turns a profit. And because of that, that's like 10x the risk of venture capital at a much smaller dollar level with a much lower financial return. So in order to recoup and make that model work, they had to sign 7 album 360 deals. Otherwise, math didn't work, right? And so what we're bringing, I think, is something the music industry has never had, which is a purely philanthropic, deeply local catalyst of community to support local music and to take pride in it and to celebrate it and to get the best of each of these great cities and their sound. Everyone's got a unique sound.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out on the road and in front of the world. And then to get those artists in those cities connecting and working together, right? The only way you make a sustainable difference in a musician's long-term health is to create, to accelerate time to audience, to grow fans, right? Right now, a band from Seattle that wants to get into Austin spends 2-3 years saving money, flying down, playing to 5 people, 6 months later to 20 people. They have to build a fan base. And by doing an artist exchange where a band from Seattle can exchange with a band from Austin that can pack a room, first time that Seattle band walks into Austin, they're playing to 500 people.
Got it.
Right? And so it's these, no individual music city has the ability to save their own population. The resources are just not there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So it's hard for a local band to go and play in another city because
touring is, it's not practical very much anymore. Merch sales used to support bands and
that doesn't happen.
Right. It's just not, it works, but it works for 1 out of 100. And it leaves a lot of very deep talent on the road behind it. So there's an opportunity to build something that's never existed in the music industry. We compare it to a minor league of music. This idea that we can have, you know, farm teams of incredible musicians that are receiving grants and investment capital from us and mentoring and education, and put them on the road into all these other cities where they play to larger audiences much faster. And it becomes, you know, if you're in the industry or you're a band wanting to be in the industry, you know, you gain visibility, right? Mm-hmm. We reduce risk for the record label because they used to invest in artist development,
right,
and touring. They do less of that these days because TikTok has filled that gap,
mm-hmm,
right? But, you know, TikTok's creating some great breakouts, but those are, it's so funny. Like, some of those bands have never played in front of an audience. Like, they make a great video in their living room. That there's literally not a band. They're two people that have written a catchy song.
Right.
And then the label has to go in and build a band around them, teach them how to tour, get them on the road, right? We have a much more organic model, which is designed on building a community through which people rise up, receive the resources they need and the coaching they need, and then can go on to the next stage of their life, whether that's with a record label or there's an old 1,000 true fans model, which is the idea if you have just 1,000 fans in the U.S. and each of them is giving you $100 a year, that's a good job, right? And so there are all these different paths for a local musician to make a living, but it's not clear.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to, the creative world is a tough world. What was the first start? Like, who was the first band? Like, has there been like a breakout success?
I wouldn't take credit for that, for sure.
Right.
The musicians that Sonic Guild is addressing are bands that have been performing generally in and around Austin or on the road for years, right? They've just kind of reached this point in their career where they're ready to go to the next level and the capital's not there. Banks won't lend them money. But our system identifies those artists and gets them on stage in front of our patrons much earlier in their career, right? So of the 250 or so bands we've distributed grants to, three have gone on to get Grammy nominations.
Okay.
One just finished producing an album with Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys, and that same cat spun around and is now opening for Billy Joel at Hyde Park Stadium in London.
That's pretty great.
So we're helping, right? They're doing the hard work, but we're providing resources.
And I know this already. What's the percentage of, like, from investment that goes back into the community? I mean, obviously you have to, you know, there's a piece of it that has to run the machine behind it. And then give me the numbers of how much money you've given out to artists. And when did this whole thing start?
Started in December 2012. We had our first gathering of patrons.
Okay.
We didn't catalyze it an organization until March the next year. So it took us a while to get to our first 100 members. That enabled us to give away $100,000 in grants.
Oh, wow.
Right. So it was a real amount of money very quickly. Sorry, I lost the question.
No, it's totally fine.
The efficiency of them. Look, I wish I could play music. I'm not very good at that. I'm great at financial models and starting companies and building businesses. And we're 10 years in on this, and we worked the first 7 years. We did it all volunteer. Nobody was paid, right?
For how many years?
Seven.
7 years. Nobody got paid.
Nobody. And this was my second music nonprofit, and the other one's been around for 20 plus years. So I've been, you know, I and a core group of my friends and colleagues have been throwing their backs into making this model happen, and it's happening. It's succeeding, right? So we're not at scale. We're nowhere near at scale, and 76% of every dollar through the door is being distributed to local musicians or local music businesses. Members are at the core of that. For every dollar a member contributes, we're distributing $1.28 to a band, directly to a band, right? So if you're a patron walking through the door of one of our shows, you're going to that show, and still 130% of every dollar you give us is going to a musician.
How is it like 130%? How does that math work?
Because we pull in corporate sponsors to help offset the cost of events, right? We pull in grants, right? We're raising, our revenue is distributed across all of the different types of revenue pretty well. Like our membership's about 35%, and that's the largest percent of our revenue of anything.
Okay, so gotcha.
Because there's a lot of sources of income.
That's very cool. I know that, you know, some of these artists that you're, well, why, let's just go into why Bentonville? Like, why, what Well, I mean, obviously, everyone talks about how Bentonville is going to be the next Austin. I used to, you know, I used to go to Austin. It was a much smaller city. People forget that it used to be a small little town with, you know, just Sixth Street. And now they look like, Bentonville will never be Austin. I'm like, don't kid yourself. I mean, it could be, it's definitely going to be something.
That's part of the reason I want to be here, right? Austin's gotten challenging for musicians to stay in, right? We're losing musicians. They're moving away. Some a lot more are moving in, but Bentonville is what the city has done with the support of the Walton Family Foundation and others, is amazing. Like the level of thought that's going into city planning and growth and arts and attraction and tourism and industry and startups, there's a lot of very smart decisions being made in this town. And if I can drive the level of engagement I'm hoping to here, we have the ability to get ahead of that challenge for artists in a way that could be really meaningful. And in particular, because Bentonville, if you look at the map of the United States, Bentonville is sort of the positioned like the Chicago of the South, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the middle of everything. And flights from here go to every one of the major music cities that are, you know, straight to Seattle, straight to Denver, straight to Atlanta, straight to Nashville, straight to Austin. Like, if you are a musician and using Bentonville as a hub, and you're touring 200 nights a year, this place is great. There's a low cost of living just outside of the city limits. Mm-hmm. You can buy a home.
And by this way, the city limits are not large.
Right.
Like, the city, it's a 3-mile city limit or
something.
It's
growing fast.
Oh, yeah, right? For sure, 100%. I mean, there's different Rogers and all that kind of stuff, but there's, you know, you compare this to like a city, it's,
yeah.
Cities are, the little towns are, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the question here is, as Bentonville develops as a music destination for tourism, does Bentonville want to be Aspen or does it want to be Austin, right? Is it going to be a place that has only large venues and only imports major touring acts? Or is it going to have a population of local musicians that are talented, supported, plugged into the industry, know what it takes to kill a show in Austin and can deliver that same level of performance here,
mm-hmm.
And build a community? And that's what we do. We build communities. We pull in corporate sponsors and individual donors and grants from institutional money, and we build a community. And our events are special. Like, our events are small. The vast majority of our smalls are... Our shows are under 200 people, and we're doing almost 100 shows a year now in the United States with 8 employees. That's crazy, right?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So if Bentonville is going to have local businesses, bars, clubs, restaurants that want live music as a component of their offering, they need local musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Or musicians that are looking to grow their audience quickly and are on the road. And we would create a catalyst and a magnet for that community. And because we don't own buildings, we don't own recording studios, we deliberately don't compete with for-profit business, we enable all those businesses to turn a profit, right? We will pay a band to perform at a local venue. We'll bring our members in early, private show, 7 to 10, turn the keys over to the venue. They've already made their nut for the night in the first 3 hours of the day, and they got the rest of the night to entertain people.
That's great.
And a world-class band in the space.
Yeah, it must like help also just, once you build the machine, you're almost making, if younger kids can see that they could be a musician,
right,
then you're kind of, I guess, you know, developing the ecosystem that where dreams are possible. You know, when, you know, like, nobody believes you can really be an actor, but you live in LA, you realize, oh, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of sacrifice, a lot of dedication.
A process
to do it. You know, somebody will call me every once in a while and they're like, hey, you know, I'm an actor. I'm like, you got to move to Los Angeles. I mean, you got to make the sacrifice. You can't just, you know, if you just want to do local theater, it's totally fine. But if you want to make the step to be a professional actor or, you know, really be in the, you gotta do it. You can't just say you're going to do it. And you got to go where the machine is. So it's very cool that you're building these machines.
Yeah, it's working. we have a very big vision here. You know, we're hoping to be in 20 plus of the biggest, most popular music cities in the United States within the next 5 to 10 years, right? We begin to have a scale at that point that can really impact our musicians and can, you know, it's fun to get, if you're a member, you're like instantly plugged into the music scene. Like you get to meet the artists, know the artists. We do events in all kinds of strange, cool places.
Yeah, I think why don't you just tell me, because I mean, I know this. Tell me how the structure works.
Like, tell me,
yeah, the member structure.
So we charge $750 a year in annual dues. That's eligible for corporate match by a lot of major employers, which can cut that price, you know, by 30% or 40%. In return for your dues, you get invited to private member-only shows about once a month. In Austin, we're now large enough where we're doing 40 of those a year. And then you participate in an annual artist selection process. So we provide our grants on a community-selected basis. And so our members get to nominate and vote for bands to get grants from us. All of our prior artists we've funded get to vote and nominate. Industry advisors, we're 40-plus strong in Austin of people that live and work in the music industry that own venues. They participate in the artist selection process. And so that in Austin, that generates a list of, you know, 500-plus bands a year that people are putting forward. We stack rank them. We sort through it. We create a playlist of 100. 3 months later, everybody votes. We pick 20 bands, and they hold a whole season of shows, these private shows. And then at the end of that, we have a gala event, and everybody has voted and sort of said, every one of those 20 artists who were invited get a grant because they're great. The system just, the bands that are coming up through that are world-class. We funded 80-plus percentage of the Austin Chronicle's best new bands in the last 10 years.
Wow.
So it works. And so you're participating in the selection of artists, you're allocating money, you're doing that alongside the arts community, the musicians themselves, and then those grants are distributed. And then the artist that receives those grants then has access to an advisory board. Again, in Austin, that's people that have, you know, toured with Beyonce and produced records for Pearl Jam. And, I mean, it's a world-class group of industry folk that can help those artists make decisions about how to allocate that money and move it around, right? I don't think I answered your question, did I?
No, you totally answered my question.
The member experience, right?
Yeah.
You join. It ends up costing you roughly $50 a month. You're getting at least one show a month for that, and then you're participating in a community-driven philanthropic process that awards grants to artists.
Well, I think it's very cool that you came. I mean, obviously, we met, I guess it's been a year now. It's very cool that you're here, and I've said this on every show, and I say that on every show, but 2 years ago is, you know, like I feel like there's so much talent that is starting to move to this town, including bit kind of what you said, like incredible business, like men like in music departments or, you know, film producers that are all kind of moving here. They're all kind of a little hush hush, but they're all moving away from their big city places and they're trying to find the next little cool destination. And, you know, Austin's a very cool place, but it's definitely lost a little bit of its, like, I remember when it's like, let's keep Austin weird. And I feel like Austin has lost its a little bit of its weird.
It hasn't. It's just gone underground.
It's just, okay, that's true. Like, it's lost its, I guess it's lost its from its where it was before.
There's a lot of people that are unplugged.
Yeah,
because right now, you know, it costs you $40 and 30 minutes to get to downtown and park for an evening.
That's what I mean.
That's a pretty significant barrier.
Yeah, it's a real city now. It's San Francisco. Yeah. It's L.A. It's, you know, you get a parking ticket, you lose your house. You know, I always loved L.A. It was like you get one parking ticket, it's like $200, and you're like, you know, then you can't pay your rent, and then you're on the streets. It's terrible.
You're scarred. You're scarred for life.
I'm scarred for life. When I was such a young guy, I just was like, I was out there and I just got one parking ticket. I was like, oh my God, my world's going to die if I get another parking ticket. It's like Rainy Street. It's just such a bummer. And I still love Austin. Austin's very cool. The food is great. The musicians are incredible. So, I mean, it's still an incredible place. I'm hoping to see that kind of growth here. I mean, I'm really excited to see. There's not a lot of music. In this, well, I mean, everything's being built right now. There was only, I mean, that's right. We've already doubled the amount of restaurants since 2 years ago. Yeah. Venues are coming.
Larger venues
are coming.
Yeah, I don't have any visibility into like the smaller clubs, right? That's the part of the ecosystem I think we can help address, right? I mean, people come here for weeks to ride bikes and be here, but Tuesday night, Wednesday night in this town, not much going on. Lots of great restaurants, right? But it ends at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We can bring world-class musicians here. We can raise up world-class musicians that are here to provide something the city doesn't have.
How much money have you given away?
$3.7 million to artists and, my math, $1.8 million to local music businesses for a total of $5.6 million.
Wow.
By the end of the year, that'll be mid-$6 million. So we did $1 million just last year in 2022.
Really?
Yeah.
$1 million?
Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting perspective on this, right? So North American music industry distributes about $1.5 billion a year to local artists. Symphonies and operas all across the country are running about $2 billion a year in revenue. And our model is 75 to 80% of that is distributed to the local music economy. Like, if you could channel the energy that's flowing into symphonies and operas and channel it into local music,
mm-hmm.
You can revolutionize the music industry. You can make it possible for the top 3% or 5% of bands to make a living doing what they're doing. We're chasing a renaissance in local music.
It's when you did that pitch to me the first time, I just had never thought about. I think the nonprofit world has been fascinating to me because I'm just a guy that doesn't really like to ask for money. And, but it's interesting of like, it's so right there. Like, why aren't we supporting local music? Like, because the symphony is local. I mean, and the orchestra is local. They're obviously very talented musicians. I actually like classical music.
I do too.
But why aren't we? I mean, it was such a great idea, and it's obviously just something that you're taking on your back, but we should be supporting local artists just the same way as we support.
Why wouldn't we? We like the music,
right?
And we want it to be there. You know, what's happened is the demographics have shifted. The baby boomers have grown older, right? And so the symphonies, and I don't wish ill on symphonies and operas, but their audience is aging out,
mm-hmm.
And they're not being backfilled by younger donors. And so we're trying to move into that vacuum.
Oh, that's interesting. So they're suffering the same world as this TV world. Everything is changing. I think
and taste is changing, right? So yep. I look at my father. He's 85. He only listens to classical music. His brother, who's 81, listens to everything, right? Grew up on rock and roll, and you know, isn't afraid to listen to hip hop and rap, and like he loves music, and he's used to going out.
Interesting. What made you fall in love with music? Was there a specific thing that made you? Was there a specific artist that you?
I'm a pretty intense introvert, right? You know this.
Yep.
You're not.
And so, I am not.
And I appreciate.
I would like to think I am sometimes, but I'm not. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I admire you and consider you a friend because you see me for who I am, and you lend your strength to me, and I appreciate that. Like, that's big.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. I'll take it.
So I'm an introvert, and for me, you know, high school was wonderful and risky and full of life, right? But I was an introvert, so I didn't connect very well with people, and music was my avenue to understand that, right? So I explored emotions and relationships through music, and it connected me to the world and got me in a lot of trouble, but
okay.
Damn good trouble, right? And so, yeah, very early on, I knew music was a very, very important component of my life. And I think a lot of people are like that, right? Different people have different things. They're culinary, they like movies, they like music. Not everybody gets what we're working on, right? But if you like music and you want to be part of a community that loves music and supports it, that's us.
Who are your artists? Who are your favorite bands way back in the day?
Oh, God. I mean, a lot of them were local, right? So... God, I don't even know if I can say some of the names anymore, but I grew up on a band's a little bit on the edge of the post-punk career in Austin, Texas. So a bunch of local bands like Zeitgeist. The bigger ones were, you know, obviously Sleep at the Wheel and Guy Forsyth. And, you know, not a lot of them are huge household names. Stevie Ray Vaughan was in there. We caught him a couple times at Antone's early on. But Austin sort of has never had its moment in the sun like Seattle.
Right.
Austin is quirky enough.
They didn't have their Nirvana.
We didn't have enough concentration of any one genre of music because we have them all. Like any night of the week in Austin, there are 100 live stages. You know, Austin gets guff sometimes for calling itself the live music capital of the world, but I've now been to a bunch of major music cities, and Austin's doing more.
Right.
And Austin just this year started distributing $3.5 million to local musicians to help them remain in market.
Oh,
yeah. City of Austin did that. It's taken them 40 years, but
they just realized people are leaving. It's so expensive now.
Yeah. And it's an asset, right? It's a cultural asset in Austin. Music generates $1.8 billion a year in revenue for the city, and tax revenue for the city. You can't. Yeah. You got to water the roots of that tree.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. It's a big business.
The business side of things is.
Well, and that's frankly part of what's here, right? The city is growing rapidly. And there are needs of the community that are not being met. There's always something going on here. Always.
Always.
But it's not a lot of live music.
There's definitely not a lot of live music.
Certainly not in a small venue format. Right, you have to be willing to go to festivals and coliseums.
It's funny. When I was younger and I used to go to South by Southwest, I told you the story the other day, but we all had fake IDs. We walk into that little bar and there was like two people in there, and there was probably four of us with fake IDs going in there and getting purple Hooter shots or whatever they were. Because you could do fake IDs in Texas way back in the day. And I looked on stage and Metallica and Willie Nelson were playing.
Yeah. Right.
And that was a moment where, I mean, Austin was still a town, right? South by Southwest wasn't sponsored by Coca-Cola and all this big stuff yet. It was really just a town where any kind of artist from all different types of the world, and Metallica was, they were super famous, but they weren't what they are today. They weren't, I mean, well, not today, but they weren't like the biggest, hugest band in the world. I'm sure Metallica was freaking out that they were able to play with Willie Nelson more than Willie Nelson would be like, oh my God, you know. But then again, it might have been the Ride the Lightning was probably happening, right, and all of that was going
on. I think
on.
Willie just likes making music.
Willie is Willie. Everybody loves that guy. Him and Snoop Dogg are just the most fascinating people in the world.
Yeah.
But that was just a really cool time to see that kind of music growth, I guess, in Austin. To see that kind of, I hope that this kind of can start sparking that kind of engagement to where we start seeing some of the big artists kind of come here, which I feel like is happening because, you know, you come to Blake Street and this place is amazing.
Well, and the AMP, they're booking major touring acts into the AMP, right? But what you're missing is small, intimate, you know, shows where you get to interact with the people that are there, right? There's no community around it. Maybe there is. Maybe I don't know. But, you know, the bands we brought in to Bentonville, you know, one of them is a Grammy award winning, or sorry, Grammy nominated. One of them is a Grammy nominated bluegrass musician. You know, four of them have been picked up to play at Format Festival, the big festival that's coming up right?
So that's in just a couple of weeks.
You know, we're spotting talent a little bit ahead of Format Festival. You know, the fellow I told you about who produced his next album with Dan Auerbach from the Black Keys and now is playing for Billy Joel, like, there's definitely a portion of the musicians we're connecting with that are on that trajectory.
Who are the bands that are playing in Format Fest? Do you remember?
The bands from that we've helped.
Uh-huh.
Past Lives are returning for their second show at Format Festival. The local band out of Fayetteville, Modeling, has been picked up. So I think C3 and whoever the powers that be here are beginning to recognize local talent as part of that equation.
What do you see the future of Sonic Guild going, even locally, if you want to go there?
Our first hurdle locally is getting 200 members signed up, right? We've got about half that either signed up or pledged at this point.
So you have 100 members right now?
We have 20 paid, and we have 76 that have said they're going to pay, but we have to go convert them. And we just started. We always try to get to about 100 members before we catalyze a chapter.
Okay.
Right? Because before you hit that point, there's sort of risks to sustainability. And the last thing I want to do is come in the door here and make a lot of promises and not deliver on them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we need to get that number fully mature. At about 200 members here, we're self-sustaining, right? That's an entity that's giving away $50,000 to $100,000 a year in grants to local artists, that's holding 12-plus live shows and has staff, a staff, right? And so that's sustainable. Scalable, it's been really interesting since the Waltons, Walton Family Foundation, funded us. We've picked up major arts funders in Texas and Washington, right? So the stamp of approval from the Walton Family Foundation meant that we were able to raise more institutional dollars in other places and you know, with six figures, right? And so my hope is that I can help Bentonville understand that by creating this here, it's not big. It's very small, the number of people that are involved. It's that we're not focused on audience because we don't want to compete with the local venues that are. Right? We're about patronage. We're small shows, but we focus on generating margin dollars to invest back into the community, right? My hope is that we're quickly moving into Tulsa and Kansas City, on the path to Chicago and up to Minneapolis, right? And from Seattle down to Portland. It's kind of what I hope is the immediate roadmap. That would give me 8 chapters and a nice, you know, semicircular tour route to engage artists.
I was just about to say that. So the ultimate goal is to almost create a, I always think of my old stand-up days, but, you know, we used to do this really terrible comedy run called the Tribble Run. And what up, Tribble? What up, Dave Tribble? But it was like, it was one of the, like, you know, it was just like, it was basically through, like, we'd start in California, go all the way through Washington, Oregon, and then kind of come back down. And it was just this little run you did, and you would just like do all these little venues and kind of whatever. So you're trying to connect all the cities. So then to kind of what you were saying earlier is that the bigger band that's in Seattle will either, they'll play together, I guess. And
we'll create grants that provide financial incentive for a band in Seattle to invite an Austin band they like to come up there to open for them and do an exchange, right? And so we provide, we cover cost of travel and things like that. We facilitate that relationship.
That's what you meant by exchange. I think I kind of lost that. For some reason, I was like, they're exchanging houses? But no, so you're exchanging stage time and audiences. So you're exchanging your audience wealth.
That's right. And from the perspective of Bentonville, that means every new chapter we open anywhere in the United States, and most of these are large music cities, right? Nashville, Atlanta. We can bring those artists here, and we can marry them up with local talent and provide local talent with access to resources to get out on the road and into those major music cities, right? So I think from the perspective of a member here, you like live music? Want to see it once, twice a month? We're going to be bringing really amazing, accessible acts, people you can engage with and talk with and understand their art and see them in a small room with your friends. And we do all our shows are doors at 7, first band at 8, second band at 9. We tend to wrap up by 10:30. It's early, it's accessible. It's a listening room, so the rule is when the music starts, when the song starts, the talking stops, right? You can yell and chat with your friends all you want between songs, but we're respectful of the artist, and that's the experience we deliver. So I see opportunity here, both in terms of catalyzing the community around the local talent and in creating a sustainable tour route at the national level. You know, from a perspective of a band, if you have 3 or 4 anchor dates in a major city where you're going to have a good audience turnout, that routing becomes sustainable, and you can begin to branch out into other markets that are adjacent to that. And so we're going to create a brand behind the artists we're funding. 250 amazing bands have already been through our program. And we hope that the reputation of the organization is such that it's a vehicle for music discovery, right? Like, you've seen how many of our bands now?
I don't even know. 10, 12?
And they're...
they're great. I'm super excited about this whole Sonic Guild thing coming together here in Bentonville.
Our official model is, motto is Patrons of Local Music. So it sums up what we do in our secret is we do cool shit.
You do cool shit. And thank you for coming on the Good Time Show.
Thank you for having me, man. Thanks for being a friend, right?
Exactly. All right, guys. Thank you for the good times. Well, that's our show. If you didn't get a chance to watch the episode, check it out on YouTube and Spotify. You can also listen to The Good Time Show on Apple Podcasts or any other platform. We are always trying to grow our Planet Good Times community, so subscribe and follow us at Good Times Us on almost all social media platforms. This episode was presented and recorded live at Blake Street House Sound Lounge in Bentonville, Arkansas, a social club where people from all walks of life come together just to be themselves and make the community a better place. Till next time, good times, everybody.